Thanks for downloading the New Voices podcast. This podcast is a production of New Voices magazine and the Jewish Student Press Service. The podcast was recorded at our 38th annual National Jewish Student Journalism Conference. For more information on New Voices or the Jewish Student Press Service, visit www.newvoices.org. What follows is a panel discussion among the editors of Jewish student magazines, newspapers, and literary journals from across the country. We join the discussion a few moments in. The participants are Emily Larmer from The Shmooze, which is a publication out of Northwestern University, Nate Lerman, who's the editor of Yeshiva University's Commentator, Aaron Rotenberg, who's the editor of Columbia Barnard Hillel's literary journal called Avanim, Dan Schechten, who's the editor of Hakesher, which is a literary journal from Baruch College, and Zahara Zahav, who works with The Spiel at the University of Florida.
Undergraduates identify as an Orthodox Jewish institution, practically, if not legally, and all the students are involved in some morning Jewish studies program. And what we end up doing is we cover a lot. So on the one hand, we have the first responsibility of being a student newspaper, covering the news and events and opinions that are on our campus. Additionally, one of the things which we've developed a little bit in the past couple of years is the fact that there's a little bit of a lacuna in coverage of American modern Orthodox from a newspaper perspective. The Jewish Week and Jewish Press both have their niches, but they don't fit exactly that modern Orthodox world. So, number one, the fact that a lot of the modern Orthodox people are people who went to YU or know people who went to YU and therefore read the Commentator online or get it delivered to them because the university sends about 2,500 copies to alumni who request it, as well as the fact that a lot of those people have, you know, sons or daughters who are students at the campus, means that we have an audience that's interested in a lot of those issues. So we'll get into a National Jewish Synagogue organization that's an Orthodox synagogue. We'll get into some of their policies and the reaction of the different synagogues. But primarily, our first focus is covering the news that occurs on our campus.
Hi, my name is Dan Chikdikin. I go to Baruch College. I'm an accounting major. And before I begin with our literary publication, our magazine, the monthly release, I think we should go through some history of the school, some background. So it's primarily a business institution where everyone's majoring in business or finance or accounting or economics. And most people don't really care too much for liberal arts. And at one point it got so bad that now any business major is required to have a liberal arts minor and to take all their elective credits in liberal arts. So we remember how to write. So the magazine itself started about 4 years ago by an Israeli girl with her friends that wanted to have Israeli culture and Hebrew life on campus. They wrote about Israeli music, Israeli movies, art, and then just news about Israel. And now that she graduated, the new staff decided that those topics aren't really what matters to students of Baruch College, and we care more about just our opinions or ideas. So at this point, our magazine's just about, we have an inbox, and you send in your thoughts. Over the course of the day, everyone thinks. You have thoughts, you want to share them with your friends. So now we ask you to write them down, keep it short, 300, 400 words. Send them into our inbox. We meet twice a month, the first time to choose which articles are appropriate. And then we separate them between the editors, who takes which one. And then the second time we meet after it's already edited, and we do the layout and send it into publication. So our mission, basically have a good time. We have no real deadlines. We just have fun with it, because that's what we're about. We're a business school with an interest in writing.
Hi, I'm Emily. I'm here from Shmooze. I'm the managing editor there. We are a magazine published out of Northwestern, and we actually went national a couple months ago, which is exciting. I guess the best way to describe Shmooze content-wise is, think Sarah Jessica Parker meets Michael Cera. We have really fun and trendy stories about various things from Jewish YouTube hits to unique Hillels, plus we have kind of nerdy intelligence stories about globalization with kosher food. So I guess with Shmooze, we have two main goals, the first of which is to present information to promote discussion. We present the information from both sides of the story to, I guess, provide enough information for students to form their own questions about what we've discussed. And our other goal is to promote Jewish journalism and just general Jewishness with students who may not otherwise identify with Hillel or otherwise be actively involved with their Jewish roots. What's also interesting is because we have started distributing not just through our Hillel and throughout campus, we have a surprisingly large non-Jewish following. And it's always interesting when non-Jewish students come up to me and tell me about how much they learned about Jewish culture or Jewish anything from Shmooze.
Thank you, guys. So we've got a bunch of questions, and then we'll take questions from the audience. Again, like, not all these questions are going to apply to all of you because you all have very different publications. But I want to get back to this thing about, you know, what's a Jewish topic and what belongs in a Jewish magazine. How do you make those decisions, and do you draw, I mean, is there a line, or have you had to draw the line? Start with you.
There must be a line, right? We don't, I don't know if we, we don't draw one so strictly, right? Because we're sort of making the magazine the forum to, like, think of what is a Jewish piece of art or piece of writing. I think what ends up happening, or practically, when we decide on submissions, is we sort of tend towards things that have more Jewish content, but are just generally looking for high quality things. And I guess we don't even really screen for, like, Jewish writers or artists necessarily. Just whatever we get, we sort of look at as is. And I think that maybe part of the reason it's like this is that we're still, I think ideally we would like to draw a stronger line and say we only want things that are Jewish somehow in form or content. But I think we're still a young magazine. We're still getting started. And yeah, I think there's a piece and then an issue that we had a couple years ago. I think it was our first issue. It was just a picture of, like, some people, like, standing outside on the street, like, leaving a party or something. And it was called If I Forget the New Orleans. So there was nothing particularly Jewish about this picture. It was sort of given a Jewish title and put in a Jewish framework. And I think that our magazine sort of, like, works to do that sort of thing for everything that gets submitted, to sort of give it a Jewish title, even if not all the pieces necessarily have their own Jewish title, just sort of a Jewish framework.
Cool. Anybody else want to address that? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. So where we live, where the Spiel is located, there's a very active, very lively kind of newspaper community. So from the very beginning, definitely our goal was about a community surrounding a paper, and, you know, fostering that. So I guess what we think about when we're thinking about what goes in the paper is what is going to speak to those people, you sort of mentioned this, what is going to speak to those people who aren't going to walk into Hillel. So, but at the same time, maintaining an identity separate from the hundreds of other, you know, publications that are available in Gainesville. So, I mean, what is Jewish, like, you know, that's complicated, but it's kind of just like what we think at the time.
I actually have a question for Emily. You know, as when I got to New Voices and started thinking about how to put together a national Jewish student publication, I had a real problem thinking about who my readers were, who our readers were. You know, talk about, like, Jewish students in sort of a broad national sense seems like a ridiculous thing. I mean, it's such a diverse and atomized group. You know, there are all these studies coming out, like Stephen Cohen likes to talk about the iPod generation, where you're, like, constructing your identity in a ever narrower, self-determined type of way. That is very hard to think about, you know, what Jewish students real large are gonna be interested in. So as, you know, someone managing a sort of a national Jewish student publication, or becoming national, I don't know what stage you guys are at in your national.
Yeah, we are national.
You're national. So I mean, how do you think about who your readers are and who they're gonna be?
Well, I feel like our content hasn't really changed very much, because it's not like it's localized by community or by Northwestern. I mean, we do change our sources up, of course, and don't just include Northwestern people. But most of the content is pretty universal. Like, I mean, we had a story in our last issue about IDF soldiers who are in college-age IDF soldiers. So, I mean, people at Northwestern versus people at any other school would still find it, you know, still find it at the same level of interesting.
But, like, in terms of, like, the I mean, do you think when you think about your reader, are you thinking about an Orthodox reader or a secular reader? Or do you think it doesn't really matter? They're sort of all interested in.
Well, we don't really discuss it religiously because it's more culturally. It's, I guess, just anybody who's interested in reading about Judaism from a cultural perspective.
Uh-huh. So any other you guys that deal with this?
Well, we don't deal with it as broadly in terms of, I'm sure the questions we face are different nature than a lot of the other Jewish but papers and magazines here. But we do deal with, now that one of the things I pushed a little bit was trying to get involved in some of those issues that impact on modern Orthodox Jewish life that particularly relate to students on campus, but also broadly, we have dealt with that issue, whether it's via Israel, which we can talk more about later, but there was one of these issues which has come up was biblical criticism. Dr. James Kugel, who's a professor at Harvard of biblical criticism, came and gave a lecture at YU, and that became something which at YU became a hot topic. So one of the, that became, how do you deal with the Jewish issue of that? And so we had a feature story on it, then one of the Bible professors at YU wrote an op-ed piece arguing against, saying Dr. Kugel should never have come. Dr. Kugel wrote a response to him. And somebody, now a different Bible professor, wants to write his own op-ed piece, and it's developed into one of its own issues. Additionally, there's actually a Jewish student magazine on our campus that's a magazine of Jewish thought that's sort of a cousin of the Commentator, where they use our offices and we help them find their advertising budget. And they got caught in their own trouble, and the issue of homosexuality on campus became a big concern. There was a, you know, who, and sexuality was the broader topic, the, you know, whether the Jewish, Orthodox Jewish laws on sexuality, what their status should be. There were articles about that. There was an article by a homosexual Jewish rabbi, and there was an article by about an anonymous Jewish student, on campus who was writing about his experience of being homosexual on campus. So we had a large amount of, we host their articles on the internet, so we had, there was a, then they had to pull their issue. So how we decided to cover that issue, and how we decided to deal with that issue. So we wrote a feature piece about it, and we, you know, we had some analysis about it. We may have an op-ed from a different student who wants to.
They pulled their issue? They pulled their issue?
They did. There were a lot of.
Not on our campus.
Not on Stern. They pulled it from the men's campus. They didn't pull it from the women's campus. And it was a very complicated issue, and it wasn't exclusively that, oh, it has the word, you know, homosexual, and therefore it can't be there. There was a lot of internal controversy. There were some political mistakes made in beforehand, but that's, you know, one of the things we tried to do was not, you know, shovel blame at them because they're student editors, and we didn't really want to do that. But at the same time, it was one of those issues that we thought highlighted a broader issue on campus. Who should be able to speak at a Jewish, Orthodox Jewish university? What topics should be discussed? What are acceptable within the realm of discourse, whether it be on biblical criticism or whether it be on sexuality? And those were a lot of the things that we've had to deal with over the year that have become important issues.
At least another issue, I don't know if this was part of the story there, but and I think this probably applies to all of you. To what extent or what role do faculty advisors play in your publication?
There are no faculty advisors
at all.
And faculty probably would prefer there be advisors, but there are none. The administration probably prefer they have an administration advisor. But one of the things is that the Commentator, I mean, the battles over its independence were largely fought in the 50s and 60s. At one point in 2000, the administration would pull the Commentator when the board or a huge amount of the parent body would come and speak, because Commentator was doing a lot of muckraking stories about the administration at the time. There was I don't know whether they were or weren't accurate. They were before my time, but that was became, and they pulled them. It was reported in the New York Times. The Commentator sued YU, and they gave them $1,600 and agreed never to do it again. So there was one time in the 50s where they were writing articles against mandatory minyan attendance. And the dean of the college wrote, you know, told them that there would, you know, they can't deal with that issue anymore. This was in 1957, I believe. And the Commentator put a front page editorial. The next thing, we will not print any more commentators if we're not allowed to write what we want to write about. So thankfully, these issues have been fought before us on some of the very sensitive issues. Obviously, the Madoff and Merkin issue affected Yeshiva University very directly, and we were put under a lot of pressure to not report certain things. But because we have our own office, primarily our one of the things we focused on this year is having an advertising budget that's not heavy on YU offices, so they can't cut us off. Also, once YU cuts its budget, that we won't. That's been successful. We are pretty much independent now. We're still at the same time students, and there's a very close. One of the issues that comes up is not so much that there's a faculty advisor, but a lot of students are impacted when there's a faculty. There was a teacher who gave a speech about who signed an open letter to Obama, calling on him to basically compare Israel to South Africa, and it called on Obama to stop support of Israel. It said Israel is one of the worst practitioners of ethnocidal activities in the world, worst human rights violators in the world. And one of the writers, who I thought might be good for writing the story, taken this teacher for class, liked this teacher, taken the chairman of the English department. They didn't want him to write it. The student didn't feel comfortable putting his name on the story because he would have felt pressured otherwise by the entire English department that would have impacted his grade and their view of him because it's a small school. Whereas I'd assume at some of these other universities, the larger universities, there's one professor, two professors are doing something. It's anonymous. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to care.
What about it at Florida? What about with the Spiel?
I actually get a lot more pressure from board members, our editorial board members, what to publish or not to publish than faculty. In fact, the only time that anyone has ever asked me to look at a story before we were publishing it was this year. And that was because it was a very sensitive issue dealing with the budget crisis at Art Hillel, and some people were specifically named as being affected by different budgeting crises, whatever. But
it feels like staffing, like people are going
to get. Mm-hmm, exactly. So I actually made a decision to let them look it over, and they didn't ask for any changes because everything, was right. And so anyway. Yeah, we're kind of in the same situation in that we have a lot of freedom to publish what we want.
What about at Stern? I know you get
So Stern, the Observer, also does not have a faculty event. The Observer is the
sister
paper of the Commentator. We actually have absolutely nothing to do with each other at all. This is actually the first time I'm meeting Nathan. But
nice to meet you.
But we have no faculty advisor, and the only time when at least in my time at Stern, this is my third year on campus, when the Observer was asked not to print something was in the fall of this year. A professor came back after beginning a process of gender. Right, she was a man and she was coming back as a woman. And the Observer wanted to cover this because it was a very big issue and was picked up in a lot of just regular media and very sensationalized. And the dean asked us not to talk about it at all. And the editor-in-chief of the Observer, very respectfully said, actually, I completely disagree. I think that this is something that we need to talk about in this paper so that students have a place other than, like the New York Post, where to get information about this. And the editor-in-chief did go through on it and did not even hear any backlash, I think, or the backlash was minimal. So same sort of thing. We sometimes are a little bit at odds, but are pretty much free to print whatever we want.
She spoke at a New Voices event.
Can I ask about the issues being pulled? Because I know I heard a little bit. It was the students themselves.
Students pulled the issue. They were not forced to pull the issue. They were advised to pull the issue. And
so
there were
from pressure from not advisors per se, just pressure from
It was
the general community or readership.
It was complicated. I would say it would probably be due to pressure from both. And one of the things, they have multiple heads. They have four editors. So there were different conflicting rationales and motivations for them. But I would say that part of it dealt with the fact that they had told certain advisors of their rabbis in the university that certain things wouldn't be. They implied that certain things wouldn't be printed. They were printed. And that there was that miscommunication. And they felt betrayed. Those rabbis felt betrayed, and that became one element of pressure.
Well, the rabbis had said things that the rabbis themselves had said.
No. The issue was there were two controversial articles in this Jewish magazine of student thought, which is called Kolam Avaser. Number one was an article written by a graduate of Yeshiva University and their Yeshiva University's rabbinical seminary, Reitz, who goes around saying he's an Orthodox Jewish rabbi. I'm not getting, you know, half the people on campus will lynch you if you think he is an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and probably one-tenth of the campus would lynch you if you say he's not an Orthodox rabbi. But that wasn't the issue. They printed, he wrote a piece in the issue itself that was not in it. The content itself was not particularly controversial, but they had mentioned to a couple of the rabbis they had invited him, and he advised them to retract the invitation, and they had given him the implication that they would, and it didn't happen. But it was partly due to miscommunication. I think they didn't feel they had told him they wouldn't. They thought they were going to go discuss it, but he thought they would. Anyway, he pushed them to, and he's been someone who's instrumental in helping them grow and helping solicit articles from different rabbis, and it's a tenuous balance. Part of it also was that they didn't want to feel like their audience, a lot of their audience are people who learn in the Beit Medrash, who have, you know, strong views on the issue, and they didn't want those people to feel like that this was something that they viewed as treif. The other article, which was more controversial, was an article about whether or not Shomer Nagia is applicable nowadays, and laws relating to Jewish sexuality were applicable, that argued pretty much no, in a more of a willy-nilly fashion that generally was scorned by many of the more religious people in the school. So that those two articles became the two foci of controversy, and they had decided to pull the remaining issues. You can read it on the internet.
It tastes of how complicated these things.
Yeah.
How about the Shmuz instead?
We do have a advisory board, but they only help us with business or distribution issues. I have yet to meet them. I think I'm meeting them in a couple months.
Do they see the magazine before it goes to press?
Not until afterwards.
Does this enter into it for?
But I'm going to start with the whole Jewish issue first. Let's start a Jewish article.
Yeah.
For a magazine. So our campus only has 3 literary publications going on, unlike, I guess, Columbia and most other, and Gainesville. We have.
You beat us.
Yeah,
for us. We have 20,000 students. So there's a school. Yeah, kind of sad. There's an on-campus newspaper which just talks about what's going on in the news on campus. There's a literary magazine, non-Jewish, which comes out once a semester. Most of the staff there graduated about 5 years ago, and just receives submissions from current students. And then there's us, which comes out once a month. So we try to have Jewish values, not necessarily by Jewish students. We try to promote non-Jewish writers as well, for the reason that we're really politically dead on campus. During the Vietnam War, apparently it was popular to take over the administrative offices of your campus. And the professor was telling us that in Baruch, the kids came in after the offices closed, sat around all night, and in the morning when the secretaries came in, they left. Just so they can tell their friends that they took over the offices.
They had similar stories at Yeshiva University, where Columbia students came to train them for protests, and they went to the president's office, and the president said, "What are you doing here?" And they left. Not exactly the Students for Democratic Society chapter at YU.
Also, Hillary Clinton came to speak while she was running for nomination. And out of the whole gym was packed, but only 10%, 1% of the kids were from Baruch College. The rest of it was Hunter or something. So we wanted to train those students, basically, non-Jewish students, that if there would be like a situation where they have to choose between Jewish and non-Jewish interests over the course of business, for them to kind of choose Jewish ideas, that we stand for something that's moral, we have good ideas, we think, we, you know, process thoughts, we encourage thought, we encourage knowledge. And if they're faced with a situation where it goes either way, and they'll make money either way, to go for the Jewish side of it. So we promote non-Jewish writers as well. And our title is A Connection, used to be Hakesher, which in Hebrew means a connection. And we feel that basis of connection in college, they always tell us to make connections, to network. And we don't have any proper advertising means. We don't go to any magazines and advertise our cause. We just tell our friends, and they tell their friends, and everyone sends in their contributions to thenewconnection@gmail.com, and this is how our whole magazine gets published. In terms of faculty advisors, since we're not really, you know, critical or politically motivated in any direction, we have no real agenda, we usually have no real problem, and our faculty advisor just signs the checks to pay for the printing.
Cool. I want to ask about, you know, this previous panel was about coverage of Israel in the Jewish press. I guess you all heard it. Do your magazines write about Israel, and if so, mean, I know New Voices, that's the thing that gets the most negative reader response, sometimes positive reader response, but you know, it's an issue that will obviously, in a Jewish publication, create tensions and create difficulties for editors. Is this something that you guys have dealt with? How do you deal with it? I'm sure everyone has something to say on this one. Just like said this way and go that way. Maybe no.
Sure. I mean, yeah, we don't, because we're more of a literary magazine, the issues that we're dealing with aren't political in the same way, but I guess Israel is something that a lot of students are passionate about, so it's sort of a fertile topic for artistic expression, I think. So we're always glad to, you know, feature it. We don't have political issues.
Definitely the most reader response we get is from articles about Israel. It's kind of, we have an interesting demographic in that almost all the Jews in our area are very conservative, but on the whole, the area is very liberal. So we get a lot of criticism from the Jewish audience and for any time we question anything that Israel does. But at the same time, the majority of the mail that I get about our articles on Israel is from, we have some very left, I don't even want to call them that, groups on campus, but who, you know, think that we aren't anywhere near critical enough. So I guess that's...
How do you deal with that? Does it stop you from writing about?
It's definitely, like, I think a number of the writers sort of know about that reputation, and unfortunately, so when we have stories about it, a lot of people don't want to touch it. That's kind of been a result. Also, I think that's the main result.
How do you write about Israel? Do you write sort of like general op-eds, or is it about finding a Gainesville angle, or?
It's a little bit of both. We have a huge Gators for Israel group, and at the same time, Gators Not for Israel group. I don't want to say what it's called. It's like a big topic, and so we have a lot of opportunity to cover it from a local angle. In December, the town was in a really big uproar, to put it mildly. Lots of protesting, lots of fighting. That was a hard time, especially for us in determining how we were going to cover it.
So what was the decision?
We basically tried to do it as completely just hard news, like this is what's going on. Not a lot of op-eds, because we had them, but I didn't want to publish them because they were, you know, they weren't making good points, they were just angry points. Just a lot of name-calling rather than, like, you know, facts or anything really worthwhile to say, I thought.
Obviously, Israel is something where I think we might have probably the most pro-Israel campus in America. We did a poll earlier in the year, and it showed that, do you support Israel's action in Gaza? I think there was 2% that said no. Finding it unethical was smaller. But in the past year, there have been more liberals who have been a little more opposed to it. But obviously, those liberals would probably be considered conservatives at a campus like Columbia. So it's a totally different demographic. At the same time, there were issues, you know, there have been issues which have come up relating to Israel that we've covered. So we covered YU's students' response to the events in Israel. We assume that our readership has at least a basic grasp of the issues that are going on in Israel. You can go to the Jerusalem Post or Haaretz online. Probably most of them go to the Jerusalem Post. But we won't cover in and of itself. We have a news brief section to alert people to major things so that when there's an election, we mention that Bibi Netanyahu won. So even if you know, people are generally unaware, they can at least hopefully see it there and be aware what the specific major Israeli political situation is. At the same time, there was, when the professor signed the open letter, that interestingly galvanized more student activism against the professor than I'd seen the past few years on campus. They had students ready to write. The professor turned out she was leaving anyway, which most students were not aware of, but a lot of the students were writing, signing petitions, trying to, they wanted to buy a full page ad saying she had mentioned divestment, so they were going to say divest from Stalkup, who was the name of the professor.
In your publication.
They wanted to buy an ad, yeah, and then they realized she wasn't going to be there next semester, so there was no way to divest from her class. I mean, there have been interesting, and that was the type of issue some students didn't feel, and some professors didn't feel it was appropriate to cover. That is more of a personal issue. She shouldn't have to deal with it. But the administration was actually, interestingly, more supportive than some of the, those more students, because I think they felt, while they couldn't do anything to her, and they didn't want to, she didn't have tenure, she was leaving anyway, they fired her for budget cuts. But they themselves did feel it was perfectly appropriate to have a strong response to that type of activity on campus by a professor. So I think on our campus, we try to deal with Israel as an issue, as it relates to American Jews and modern Orthodoxy, and particularly YU. 2 years ago, there was a big deal. They decided that they used to have an Israel section. The Observer has an Israel section.
That, it's like four articles. That's about as much as it is.
In each issue?
Depends on the section. Yeah, it's three or four articles, and it's usually, so just an example of something that would fit into the Israel section.
Finish your thought, and then I want to hear.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh,
okay. So that would be something a couple of years ago the commentator decided not to cover, meaning to get rid of their, they used to have a lot of Israel coverage during the Intifada as sort of almost an emotive response. And then so when I first got on campus, the commentator had an editorial, we're not going to have an Israel section, we're not going to cover the news because we're not an Israel newspaper. And it was viewed by people, because the editor was viewed as more left-wing, it was viewed as an anti-Israel thing that also galvanized petitions, that also galvanized a response. And so we've occupied, and last year they continued that, but this year we've occupied more of a middle ground. We're not going to cover every Israel news story because, frankly, we're not going to do it as well as the Jerusalem Post, and that's not our job. But we will be involved in covering those issues. One of the things we did was, what does it mean to be good for Israel? To try to campaign coverage for Orthodox Jews. What does it mean to be good for Israel? A lot of the people discussed that. That's obviously was a very hot topic during the Obama-Clinton and Obama-McCain races, and we made sure to delve into that issue because we thought that was an important avenue to have a features issue analyzing Israel. We don't really have, I imagine if I wrote pieces that were at all anti-Israel, we'd have a strong response against, but because my politics are probably likely could, then the politics of all YU are probably likely could, with some people being, you know, you have some people really Kachniks type people and some people being Kadima, but Labor is, there might be one or two people like that, you know, who would have voted. We had a campus pulse election and almost nobody voted for Labor.
So what about
it's not, we don't try to cover any news coming out of Israel because, like Nathan said, it's not our job. We're not a newspaper that's looking to do that. But, for example, there were two or three people at the Azraeli Graduate School of Jewish Education at YU who did a study on the effect of the, a lot of students have the, you know, the sort of tradition to go to Israel for a year in between high school and college. And so they're doing a study on the effects of that on Jewish youth and, you know, are they different than when they return? So that, for example, we put in the Israel section because it was related to Israel.
Op-eds.
So the way that the editorials work in the Observer is the editor-in-chief writes a column and she usually connects it to whatever topic she discusses in the feature section. And then we have student leaders who write pieces usually on how there's a lack of unity on campus. It's like not very, there's no political agenda at all in the Observer, really.
Interesting.
There was a piece, though, last year, at the end of the year, where someone wrote that, and you shall lose the land, that one in that argued that that the reason why that was more left-wing, and that drew a very strong response. That was in the last issue of last year.
It was published in Komavasser, though.
Right, but that was, at that point, Komavasser was published within the Commentator.
Oh, right.
So that was the type of thing that drew. This year I haven't gotten submissions from people who had really strong feelings. I went to an Israeli soldier, asked him if he wanted to write, and he said he would and never got back.
How about you guys?
Yeah, we've never had any anti-Israel at all submissions whatsoever since we started. Not just that, but during the war in Gaza, the Muslim Student Alliance group had a table set up for charity, humanitarian aid, and the next day they were gone for some reason. So I feel like our school is pretty pro-Israel, and we're just anti-Gaza.
Well, I guess we look at Israel the same way that we look at anything else, and that's just from a college student's perspective. Well, we don't really talk about Israel politically. Instead, we do talk about Israel from the point of view of somebody who's a teenager or a 20-something-year-old. We've had a lot of comparative stories about daily life, but really nothing political.
And that's a decision.
Yes. Because, I guess, I don't know if it was a conscious decision or if that's just how it works. We don't really have very many op-eds or anything like that. We do have some first-person submissions, which are basically first-person accounts of trips to Israel through Birthright or through various programs. But because we really don't have any op-eds, It wouldn't fit in anywhere.
Cool. I want to open the questions.
I just want to mention also, my name is Shira and I'm creative writing manager at Columbia, that there's another publication which I don't work with, so I'd be happy to give you the website to give you more information, but which I think might be of interest to this group called The Current. It's a Columbia undergraduate magazine with an interest towards Jewish and Israeli culture and opinion and news. And just one thing I wanted to mention is that this semester, I don't know how much everybody knows, but our campus has a very strong pro-Palestinian voice, and it's something that the pro-Israel community deals with on a regular basis and tries to get our opinion out there as much as possible. And in the current this semester, there was actually an op-ed by the editor-in-chief who was writing about the fact that he was criticizing Hillel leaders for their lack of overt support for a rally in support of Israel. And I just think it's something really interesting on our campus that because, as Aaron mentioned, we have so many publications with various purposes, there ends up being almost, I think, an internal Jewish conversation, which The Current is publicized to other people, and non-Jews hopefully are reading it too. But in terms of the opinion getting out there, and a lot of you have mentioned that it's very much your magazines and your publications are very much publicized to not just the Jewish community. So I think it's interesting just when where these things end up, meaning why somebody would submit an article on Israel to your newspaper versus the campus newspaper, something like that.
We co-sponsored this event with The Current 2 years ago, I believe.
So I have a question for the people who go to not NYU. So you were talking about like how Israel is sort of just seen as like it's kind of in the framework of other stuff, so like other issues. Like is that, like I know that in like I've heard a lot about like, you know, stuff at Columbia and like they had Ahmadinejad job to speak and blah, 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 and like all sorts of things that happened. Do you find that like on your campuses, like Florida or wherever, like elsewhere, like is Israel like that big of a deal that people are writing to the newspaper or writing to your publication to talk about it, or like it's just sort of slots its way into like other like it's just sort of an international thing, or is it like a big sort of hyper like there's a lot of attention put on it like elsewhere? So
well. I think the reason why it is such a huge issue in Gainesville partly is because we have a gigantic Jewish population. But the interesting thing about the population is that almost none of them go to shul or Hillel or like anything. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic. But so the way they connect is largely through Israel. Mm-hmm. From like a political standpoint. So I think that's partly why it's so big.
At Northwestern, at least, I mean, it is, I guess it really isn't, I don't know, it doesn't come up very often. Like, while it is an issue that occasionally people do write in to the school paper about, it's not like a regular thing.
I thought at Wesleyan there was this existential crisis that every Jewish freshman had, where like you start talking to people who aren't Jewish about Israel for the first time in your life, and like it, some people like totally changes their ideas, and some people it reinforces their ideas, and I think that creates a lot of fodder, at least at Wesleyan where I went, and that's why there's a lot of interest, because it's like at the front of the minds of a lot of Jewish freshmen who are like really wrestling with like, you know, their upbringing versus like this new campus community with new ideas and new perspectives and teachers who don't agree with them and, you know, friends who don't agree with them, and it's a real experience.
There's also a large, like, radical activist community in Gainesville, and I would say, I don't want to generalize, but generally, they don't like Israel, so.
Other questions?
I also want to say that if anybody is working for a publication that hasn't sort of been represented here,
you guys were
to talk about it a little bit, because I know there's a lot of people in the room working for a lot of different publications that maybe haven't shared their experiences yet, so.
You guys were the Vassar. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, the Black Hat is Vassar's magazine of Jewish culture. It's primarily a literary magazine. We publish poetry, prose, nonfiction, photography, art, basically really anything that we can get our hands on. We have a very small submission base. Our magazine this year is mostly going to be generated by our editorial board, which is about four people. But we, in terms of like what's Jewish or not, we had sort of an issue with that. Earlier this year, we got a submission, a story that was really well written, but the only thing really Jewish about it was that there was a character in it who was Jewish. And we kind of struggled with whether we wanted to accept it or not, because it was a really well written piece. But in the end, we kind of decided, well, this is a great story, but we're not sure how it fits in with our content. On the other hand, we are publishing a story that is more marginally Jewish. Parts of it take place in Israel, and it's also about family a lot, and we thought that represented what we see as Jewish values. So that was one reason we put that in there. We do publish a lot of Israel content. Most of our photography is photography taken in Israel. And actually, we are publishing a paper that someone wrote for a class. It was a paper about A Perfect Peace, Amos Oz book, and it was interesting. It was written by a student who studied in Ramallah when he went abroad, and he had a very interesting like a blog from like a JYA blog talking about Palestinian-Israeli issues, and we actually are publishing like a sort of photo essay of photos of graffiti on the border wall, a lot of them with, you know, things to say like Free Palestine. And in terms of faculty, we're actually kind of surprised that our advisors said we could do that, because everything has to go through our advisors, because we get published, I mean, we get paid for publishing by the Office of Religious and Spiritual Life on campus. We're not an independent organization. We're like a subset of RSL. And we have two faculty advisors. Well, we have a faculty advisor and the advisory to Jewish students are both our advisors. Mm-hmm. So
why you just had to set it up like that as opposed to being, I mean, are there like, are all publications beneath the?
No. I don't know why I set up like that. The magazine has gone through several like stages. Yeah. It was there, it kind of vanished, and it came back. I think we'll be a third year now. I wasn't really here when this version of it got started. Uh-huh. But there are a lot of magazines on campus. Some of them are independent, some of them are affiliated with organizations or departments. And I don't really know how those magazines work, but uh-huh. This is just the way it is. And we can't publish it on our own. We don't have the money to do that, so we have to listen to what they say.
Huh. Are there other people representing publications that I don't know about? Other questions?
On a practical level, what are your biggest challenges and how do you deal with them? Like delegation, figuring out how to teach people, like how, what they need to improve, stuff like that.
Well, I guess for us right now, our biggest challenge is maintaining our national distribution because we just started this model. We're trying a bunch of different things out. So I guess right now we're working on, we have one person who's just working on that right now. So I guess just integrating that into the system has lightened the load a lot, because that was one of the issues for a long time.
Well, for us, since we're a commuter college, getting together would be a problem. Since we all live in different places, we got like about an hour commute time per person, sometimes an hour and a half. So getting together, finding communal, like a convenient time for everyone is kind of difficult. But since we have no real deadlines and no real schedule, we end up making time at some point later on.
I would say getting quality riders is always difficult, particularly our campus. I think students are particularly busy because they have their morning program, then they have their the Jewish that often goes until 3, and then they have their classes from 3 to 8. And then after that, a lot of them learn additional Jewish studies from 8 to 10 and only begin their work at 10. So that creates a time crunch for a lot of people, which we often get through by not sleeping and lots of coffee. But what we also do, one of the things I tried to improve this year was the quality of the writing. So I had this concept of a designated editor. So there was always the section editor was someone who would be hands-on with the article, not just you assign an article and see it when it comes back and then revise it in the office that late that night, but have someone who's hopefully working a more continual basis with that writer, advising him on who to go to, helping him sketch an outline, and making sure he hits all of his bases so that when we get there, we're prepared as opposed to we get it and then we just have to redo it. But that's always been a difficult issue for us, and it's not easy to deal with.
I'd imagine that's a problem not only with your writers, but with the editorial staff as well, that if you're first starting to work at 10 o'clock, and obviously presumably you're not working on Shabbos either, then how do you find time not only to put work into the paper, but to keep up with everything else that's going on?
I'll say, first of all, yes, it's difficult. And it's part of what it is, you know, slide in. I try to take some of the classes. They're not as strict on attendance. You know, and I'm getting really good at catching up with those notes. But that's one of the things that's been difficult. And one of the things is I'll try to find out what my editorial staff schedules are, so I know if someone's having a particularly difficult week coming up, that they're involved. One of the ways we keep up is, frankly, it's a lot of the commentator staff are the activists, and either they or their close friends are the ones who are making news on campus. So there was this honors conference today run by YU students. Half of the people are either editors or writers for the commentator, and they're the ones putting together this conference today that I was at earlier. So when we're going to cover that, it'll be fairly easy to deal with. When we had to deal with Komavasser, some of their editors are our writers, so we know what's going on. It's a close-knit campus. It makes it a lot easier to cover the news. Also, you know, a lot of people, if you're all together, and there's only 3 or 4 study halls, Beit Medrash, Bate Midrashim, and if you're in those places and people see you, they flock to you. So when if I'm walking outside in the street, it's not like, you know, there's this massive campus we have. We have a few buildings, we have a few basic places people are going to be. People will find me and tell me, oh, and half the time the rumors that are just totally not true. Really, why you lost $700 million from Madoff, not $110. How do you know this? Well, my art teacher told me. But those are the types of things. People will come up aggressively and tell you about things, and that's how you'll often, you know, because we're close-knit, a lot of people went to the same places in Israel, high schools, people therefore already know each other. A lot of people know me already, and they feel comfortable emailing me, telling me what we should cover, what we've done wrong, and that helps in terms of finding out about additional news stories and developing those things. It's a 24/7 job. I sometimes talk that it feels like I'm running a newspaper on the side. I go to some classes, and, you know, the learning is something also that you slot. And every once in a while, I'll have to leave, try to reschedule things. But you're right, it's difficult.
Zara?
I mean, you guys have mentioned a lot of problems that obviously I think a lot of us share. We really try to get people involved outside of the journalism community. For a number of reasons, and so I was actually talking with Josh earlier about this, and so they're good writers, but they are very slow to make kind of a journalistic point, I guess, and they also don't understand the kind of editorial relationship and are, you know, they don't they're not okay with me moving the point of the story from the bottom to the top. So that's kind of a challenge, definitely quality of writing and relationships with writers.
Yeah, I think we're also trying to, I mean, always trying to improve the quality of our magazine. And part of it is we're starting out. It's always hard to get people to, I mean, it's tricky to get people to submit like creative, sometimes personal things. And also trying to make interesting layouts that aren't distracting. Working on that too.
So we're about out of time. I have one more question that someone asked me the other day. Maybe it's not as interesting to all of you, but I still want to know the answer. The Jewish Student Press Service historically has had a role in the past of supporting local Jewish campus publications, sort of moved away from that for many reasons. Is there a way that we can support your publications? I think YU's probably, I mean, your commentator is probably less relevant here, but all you guys. I mean, is there something that you could conceive of needing from us? As Liz, do you have any other pointers in terms of how to phrase that question?
I guess I didn't hear what you just said, but the Jewish Student Press Service, which is our organization, used to sort of be a body that supported different publications. And Josh and I, in our time, tried to, especially in the last year, sort of rethink what that means and rethink how that could be. All of your publications are really different, and they're different from New Voices, and they're different from each other, so it's not so simple, but I mean, we really wanted to put you up here on a panel together to sort of get all of us thinking about how we might network with each other and work together, and how maybe our organization could support you. So that's part of what we want to be thinking about. So if anybody has any thoughts on that, that's probably.
We don't have any money.
get from the religious life services.
Like just knowing about some of the other things that are going on is great, and I feel like if there's a way to like trade, exchange like contact information, or to have a list of who's out there and right. How to be in touch.
I just want to add that one of the things is on the evaluation sheet that we gave all of you, which we hope maybe after this session you can spend some time filling out, is a sort of checkbox if you want to be added to a Google discussion group that we think might be a productive way to sort of continue some of the conversations that we're having today, maybe not as a permanent solution, but as a way to start some conversations. So hopefully you'll check that you do want to be in this group.
I think one of the biggest challenges that we have as an editorial board, and that I think readers and everyone involved with our paper, and maybe you guys too, is remembering why it's important to have, you know, whatever a Jewish press means. Why do we need the Spiel on campus? And it's kind of, you know, if you don't, maybe you're instance is like a little different, but I know for us that a lot of times a big challenge that we had is keeping people feeling like that was important. And so kind of being in a room with, you know, however many of you all who I think maybe agree with me that it is important is reinvigorating and inspiring and energizing and all those things. So that's kind of a way I could see just kind of that being a help, I guess.
Well, I guess I'm the black sheep on this question, the Jewish life type question, but I think there are some. I mean, I know Simeon Botwinick was writing something for you on the Tolerance Club that looked like a great piece.
Yeah.
And I think there's some things at YU that probably relate to broader Jewish issues, and I imagine there's a lot of these broader Jewish issues that can probably be tied into the YU stories. We've tried to broaden what we do, to broaden the minds of our students who are often, you know, one of the things is they're so busy. We want to get them thinking and talking about these issues. I mean, some of the issues you deal with are relevant, if indirectly, to YU students. You dealt with Chabad and their impact on Jewish students. There was a big issue last year because the head of Jewish studies and head of the Bernard Revel School of Jewish Studies is an ardent anti-Chabad activist. Very mild-mannered, hard to describe him as activist, but he's an activist. He's written books and articles and pamphlets arguing against that Chabad is strayed from the Jewish past. So
what's
that became David Berger.
Oh, right, yeah.
So he's been, you know, that became a big issue last year. Should he be that of Jewish studies? The Chabad students felt disenfranchised. That's the type of thing that could be tied in a little bit with your Chabad. You know, I'm sure you guys have information about Chabads across the country, how they deal with those issues.
For us, it's why should you write in general? Because, again, like, we're business students, and the school is trying to make us write through the political, well, through the liberal arts classes. But, again, nobody really cares too much for it. Apparently, economics is a liberal arts minor in our school. So, at this point, I think economics and public speaking are the two most popular minors. So, I guess just writing in general, why it's important. We try to convince our students that, you know, we have to write memos and emails in the business world also. And you have to put together reports and projects. But sometimes it's not working, but we still seem to get enough submissions.
Well, I agree basically with what Aaron was saying earlier, that just by, I mean, I think that this conference was great because we all got a chance to talk to each other about different things that everyone's doing. And I agree that just by keeping up the communication amongst each other will definitely help.
Yeah.